I'd like to thank the organizers for letting me present this on behalf of our team. Karen was unable to come to present these findings herself because she's in the third trimester of pregnancy with twins. The current community standard of care and the clinical management of patients diagnosed with genital herpes is ill-defined. But understanding clinical practices related to herpes, including clinical care and prevention, is an important step in creating an effective public health program to control HSV. We do have a number of proven methods of preventing HSV transmission. In a randomized controlled trial, chronic suppressive therapy was shown to decrease transmission by approximately 50%. Condoms in observational studies are associated with roughly a 50% reduction in HSV2 transmission. And disclosure of HSV2 infection status to sex partners is likewise associated with a roughly 50% reduction in HSV2 acquisition. The aims of this study were to describe the medical care and counseling received by persons in Western Washington with newly diagnosed genital herpes. We also sought to examine patient, partner, and clinician characteristics associated with the receipt of chronic antiviral therapy. In Washington State, first episode genital herpes is reportable. As a result, it's possible to do a population-based study of newly acquired genital herpes or newly diagnosed genital herpes. For this study, inclusion criteria was a new diagnosis of genital herpes reported to either Public Health Seattle King County or the Pierce County Health Department. These are both urban health departments in Western Washington. Asymptomatic serological diagnoses and diagnoses of recurrent episodes are not reportable. In King County, cases were ascertained during an 8-month period between September of 2008 and April of 2009, and in Pierce County during a 5-month period predominantly in 2009. We excluded cases that were age less than 18, those who refused consent either by the provider or the patient themselves, people who were unable to understand or speak English, and those people who we identified as having recurrent or asymptomatic genital herpes who were mistakenly reported to the health department. Data collection involved two processes. First, there was a clinician interview or fax questionnaire, which collected data on the diagnosis and treatment of the patient. In approximately 25% of cases, ancillary staff completed this questionnaire by referring to the medical record. There was also a case patient telephone interview, which collected information on patient demographics, history of genital herpes, treatment, counseling, the number and type of sex partners the person had in the 4 weeks prior to disease onset, and condom use. Over the course of the study period, 416 cases were reported to the two health departments. Of these, 367 were eligible for the study. 49 were excluded because they were either asymptomatic at the time of diagnosis or had been previously diagnosed. We completed clinician interviews on 311 cases, or 85%, and case interviews on 180, or 49%. The dominant reason for our inability to collect information from the cases was an inability to contact those people. This slide shows you case demographic characteristics, looking separately at all cases, cases for whom we had clinician questionnaire information, and cases for whom we had case questionnaire information. As you can see, the age distribution was somewhat wide, so about half of people were under age 25 and about a third over age 30. 77% of the population was female. The population was predominantly white, which is consistent with the demographics of Western Washington, and overwhelmingly was heterosexual. Just on these very basic demographic characteristics, there were not differences between the overall reported population and the population for whom we had either clinician interviewer data or case interview data. This slide shows you the practice setting and professional background of responding clinicians. 34% practiced in primary care settings, 31% in family planning settings, 11% in OBGYN clinics, 12% in urgent care or ERs, and 4% in STD clinics. 63% were mid-levels, predominantly ARNPs, and 37% were physicians. So overall, the population was not super sexually active. The number of sex partners is shown here in the 1 month prior to diagnosis. 85% of people had only a single sex partner, 7% had two partners, and small numbers had more than two partners. A very few people acquired new partners following their diagnosis. So 87% of people had no new partners between the time of their diagnosis and when we interviewed them, which was typically about 6 to 8 weeks later. And small numbers of people had a larger number of partners. This slide shows you the diagnostic approach based on the provider report. So as you can see, 95% of people were diagnosed by lesion culture, 7% by PCR, 5% by physical exam alone, 34% of people also had a serological test performed. 64% of the newly reported cases were HSV2, 36% HSV1, and 2% were mixed infections. This slide shows you the treatment of the initial episode of genital herpes, again based on the provider report. 83% of people received treatment with acyclovir, famciclovir, or valacyclovir. 57% were given written information, but only 27% had any follow-up appointment arranged. Here we see the counseling and preventive therapy following diagnosis of initial herpes. The orange bars here are based on what the clinician said, and the green ones based on what the patient said. So over 70% of both patients and clinicians said that they discussed condoms. A little over 60% said that they were counseled to notify a recent sex partner. There was some disagreement about counseling related to future partners. 26% of clinicians, but 52% of patients said that they were counseled to notify their or to inform their future sex partners. 65% discussed suppressive therapy, but there was mixed opinion about whether there had been a discussion related to suppressive therapy as a means to prevent transmission. 39% of clinicians said that had been discussed, but 69% of patients said it was discussed. Overall, approximately a quarter of people received suppressive therapy for genital herpes. This slide is showing you factors associated with taking suppressive therapy. So primary care providers were significantly less likely to provide suppressive therapy than other care providers. Suppressive therapy was more often provided to people who had HSV2, and it was associated with having a discussion of suppressive therapy and more specifically a discussion of suppressive therapy for the purposes of preventing transmission. There was no association between the provision of suppressive therapy and the case patient's age, sex, race, marital status, educational level, their number of sex partners prior to diagnosis, the clinician's sex, the clinician's practice setting, their credentials, or the years since they've completed training. Now, this slide is showing you partner notification outcomes. There were 180 index cases who reported having 206 partners in the 1 month prior to the HSV diagnosis. 40 partners, or 19%, had a prior HSV diagnosis, and of those, the cases reported that they then subsequently talked to 36% and notified those partners. 130 partners were notified, and 36 partners, or 17%, were never notified. So in summary, what we found was that diagnostic testing among reported cases appeared to be quite appropriate. Most of the clinicians discussed condoms and suppressive therapy with both patients, and most gave patients written information about herpes, though approximately a third did not do these things. Only a quarter of patients actually took suppressive therapy, and use was particularly low among persons diagnosed by their primary care provider. Few patients were offered any routine follow-up. And although partner notification levels were relatively high, a substantial number of transmissions occurred from people with a prior HSV diagnosis. The strength of this study is that it was population-based, and we had information both from the clinician and the patients. But these were collected from a single geographic region in Western Washington, which may not be generalizable to other regions of the United States. We also don't really know how representative reported cases are of all diagnosed cases in Washington State. And we had a suboptimal response rate for the case interviews. So in conclusion, I'd say that although our findings suggest that many clinicians are providing excellent care for newly diagnosed genital herpes in our community, there are significant gaps. We have low utilization of suppressive therapy, and there appear to be limited discussions related to partner notification and disclosure of HSV status to future partners. Research is needed to identify economical ways to improve care and education of persons diagnosed with genital herpes. We believe that the promotion of a higher standard of care is an appropriate focus for health department efforts, whereas direct provision of this care is probably not. An additional analysis is needed to better understand transmission from partners with prior herpes diagnoses. So that's my last slide. I'd be happy to try to answer questions if there aren't.
Put this up here so it keeps recording. Any questions for Matt?
Did you take a look at the length of the counseling sessions?
No, we didn't ask that. Yeah.
Did you have an incentive? Did you give the providers an incentive to complete the questionnaire the faster?
The question is whether or not we gave the providers incentive. We did not. Matt.
Do you know the time frame for those 50% reductions, the suppressive therapy, and reductions in transmission?
What was the follow-up in the
Yeah, what's that 50% measured over?
So the question is, what was the, in the chronic suppressive therapy study, randomized trial, what was the period of follow-up? You know, I don't remember exactly. I think it was a year?
8 months?
8 months. So that Larry Corey's the first author. It was in the New England Journal of Medicine.
Good question right here.
Did you look at whether there's a relationship between type of payer or whether the person was insured and whether they were on suppressive therapy?
We didn't look at, we may have those data, but we haven't looked at them to date. The people actually completed a fairly complete questionnaire.
Since we have a little time, I'm going to ask you a question. I'm wondering if you could describe the optimal care as you see it that a provider would give to a patient newly diagnosed with herpes.
So this is my perspective on this, not necessarily, that's so it isn't necessarily right. I think it's reasonable for everybody to receive some counseling. That counseling should include advice to use condoms, to notify past partners, in this case in the last month, since that's roughly would be the incubation period for these people. That everyone should be offered chronic suppressive therapy, and that they should be informed about the value of suppressive therapy, that's roughly 50% reduction risk. The cost of suppressive therapy is roughly comparable to that of condoms if they're taking acyclovir. I've never met a doctor who doesn't think that patients should use condoms if they have herpes, so I don't understand why we wouldn't tell our patients that suppressive therapy, which is roughly as effective and roughly as costly and associated with very minimal side effects, shouldn't be offered as an option. And my own feeling is that everyone should have at least one follow-up visit. I think that this is a lifelong infection. It isn't hugely morbid in terms of the medical morbidity, but there is substantial psychosocial morbidity. People have a lot of questions, and it's reasonable for them to have an opportunity to discuss this at least one time at some point following their initial diagnosis.
Thank you.